Hi, and welcome back to our interview with Tim Jones, CEO of Artscape. In the first half of this interview, we discussed how the Sitter Project was created and how Artscape brought the virtual reality experience to Canada. We also talked about how virtual reality can be used as both a median for both art and social change. Let's continue the discussion now.
I think just in terms of as a very powerful political message, too, we're talking about social change, but also in the sense of political change, I think it's so great to give politicians and people at the UN and people at NATO and people who maybe are more accustomed to having this report slid across the desk and here's the 100th piece of paper that I've seen about the refugee crisis and what's going on in the camps, and I'll give a quick look to this, and it's nothing new. But I think that as an artistic medium, it is so powerful that it's just such a change. It almost jolts you into sort of waking up and seeing the issues for what they are at face value, which I think is sort of the coolest part about the virtual reality thing to me, which I just loved. So when we're talking about sort of the message that is conveyed through Clouds Over Sitter, the film, there's been a sort of, I think, a very mixed reaction amongst Canadians about bringing in refugees to Canada. On the one hand, you have people who are very positive, who have sponsored families independently, donated time, resources, money to the cause, and are just very compassionate. We need to do everything that we can to help these people. And then on the complete polar opposite side, you have people who are sort of the opinion that, well, there's homeless people in Canada, and we have our own issues of there's Canadians who don't have enough to eat, who are using shelters, et cetera, and there is sort of this very negative view of the Canadian government's efforts to bring in refugees here. Do you think that the film itself, do you feel like it changes people's minds if there are people who come in to the film, to the viewing with, I don't have any interest in being open to this?
Well, that's kind of what we're experimenting with, and we're just about to launch a survey for the hundreds and thousands of people who've had the experience in the last 3 months to understand kind of how this affected them, whether they were engaged in refugee issues before they said, whether this deepened their understanding, whether it kind of provoked them to actually take some action. Because part of the project isn't just about watching the film. It's about setting some context, watching the film, having a conversation, and then presenting the kind of opportunities for people to get involved. So this is kind of an action research project.
Yeah.
We'll have a pretty good understanding in the next month or so how impactful it's been. You know, what I would say about this film is that it's not the perfect representation of all issues related to refugees. And one of the things that we've kind of really discovered through the Q&As, the conversations that happen both in the post-screening in the moment, is that it's really complex. On the one hand, you hear in the film that Sitter wants, is pining to go home, but you might interpret that to say, well, all refugees just want to go home, so why would we be bringing them to Canada? But there's also the reality that she's a 12-year-old girl. She probably doesn't recognize or isn't aware that there is no home to go to.
Right.
Right? So these are complex issues, and so it's just by opening it up and having the conversation, kind of giving people the experience, that builds a sense of understanding, and hopefully there's empathy there too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not sympathy for the people, but some sense of empathy that they're not the other, they're like us, and they need help. There's something that we in Canada can do to help them in those situations.
Mm-hmm. I think that was something that was conveyed really strongly, at least to me, when I viewed that, her desire to go home and craving, I can't wait when the war is over and when my family can go home. And I interpreted that at least as just sort of, it really conveyed just this sense of the innocence of that child's experience and just how there's no way that you could possibly understand as a 12-year-old child the immense scale and gravity of the situation that you're in, but just this sort of innocence and desire to go home and return to some sense of normalcy. And I think that was like a very important part of sort of evoking empathy from people, was like, if these people don't have a home to go back to, we need to do everything that we can to build that sense of home. And hopefully in Canada we can do that. But I think just the sense of this child is pining for something that she probably will never be able to have. And it broke my heart. I just could not I could not breathe at one point. I was like, mm-hmm. oh, like, I think it was the scene where she's sitting with her family on the floor of their tent and they're sharing a meal. And she says, I can't wait until we can go back and have dinner with my friends and family at my house. It just hit me so close to home. I cannot imagine, you know what I mean?
The fact that there were so many kids just around and you saw mostly children definitely had a very big impact and make you see that it is the fact that it is such a high percentage of children who are in these refugee camps.
Mm-hmm.
I know we covered it a little bit already, but I want to ask about what is some of the feedback that you've received about the SIDRA project and who you've reached out to so far in terms of audience. I know that you've done a lot of work in Toronto, that you were at the Pearson Airport, you were going to the Christmas market at distilleries, so you're doing a lot in Toronto. Are you going to be going outside of Toronto as well?
Mm-hmm. So we're in the first phase of the project, which ends at the end of December, and mm-hmm. over the first 3.5 months, we launched at the Toronto International Film Festival, and following 3.5 months, we'll about 7,000 people will have the experience in small groups, and we're going to boardrooms, classrooms,
awesome.
Public venues, like some that you've mentioned, and also into private homes. And, you know, in some cases, the focus is kind of more strategic. So we've been working, for example, with Civic Action, a Toronto-based group, to use the project to engage in prospective employers to get them more engaged in employing refugees. We've been working with others on the housing. Just this week, we presented to the boards of the Trillium Foundation and Civic Action. We were earlier at Verity Club, which is a women's club in Toronto, and we're in Ottawa as well, at presenting to a national conference of settlement organizations and met some members of the frontline staff at the Department of Immigration. So this project has traveled to many different places. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we're interested in, where are the other opportunities? So we ask people, if you're interested in hosting a screening, mm-hmm. we'll show up with the gear and help make that happen. So the project's just funded till the end of December. There's been a lot of interest in potential of a national tour,
yes.
possibly an international tour.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just kind of in the process of
that's great.
Figuring out how that might all happen and where the money will come from. To
right.
Do you find that there's a difference in perception based on who you're filming it to, any different types of groups?
You know, our survey will give us more info on those kinds of things. I can tell you that the high school students that have been seeing this film have just been amazing, just loving
yeah.
it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I was last week at a Forest Hill Collegiate and where we had a number of screenings, and the reaction was phenomenal.
Right.
People were really into the technology, freaked out by it, talking through the film to their friends who are with them, but then also really kind of meaningfully, like it just has kind of given them a perspective that they never would get in a textbook
yeah.
or, you know, even through a testimonial. We had recent refugees from Syria in the classroom talking with the students about their own experience and what it was like getting to a camp. And so there are waves of kind of engagement that are coming out of, people are working on Syrian cultural events that will happen in school. Some people are creating welcome baskets. Other people are raising money. So there's a lot of kind of interesting stuff that that young people are doing. And so we're really especially excited about that part of the project.
Yeah, that's great. For people who maybe aren't necessarily aware, or what is the best way for them to get involved? I know when we were at our screening that we participated in, everyone at the end had the opportunity to sort of check off little boxes of I'm interested in donating clothing, donating time, helping with housing issues, stuff like that. So for people who aren't necessarily taking this experience and running with it and creating their own projects, like
right.
baskets and welcoming families, et cetera, what are the best ways to get in touch with you guys or the initiatives that you're starting?
So, you know, one of the goals of the project is to make it as easy as possible
mm-hmm.
for people who want to get engaged in helping with resettlement of refugees in Canada to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So our website, thecedarproject.ca, is the place to go to for that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are links in that to the people, to the organizations, to what you need, step by step, what you need to do if you want to sponsor a family, if you want to volunteer, if you want to donate either money or clothing, furniture, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of the cedarproject.ca. That's the place to go for that.
And we'll put up all those links for all our listeners, and that'll be linked to the podcast, so you can definitely check that out.
Great.
Yeah. You were saying this was like the first virtual reality experience you or Gabo ever did. Could you tell us a little bit about the past events or project that you or Gabo have created and managed and the difference in perception from the Sidero project?
So Gabo is now done 6 or 7, and he's working on multiple other VR projects. Mm-hmm. He's now the UN, this September launched a UN VR app. So you can actually go down that site, the UN site, download the app, and then you can get access to all of his films. He's taken on lots of different issues.
And that's in virtual reality? Or?
Yeah, so all of his films are in VR. You need to either get yourself a Samsung headset and phone, mm-hmm. or you can also get the Google Cardboard, which is much more affordable, mm-hmm. But not as immersive,
right.
And that works with most other smartphones. Mm-hmm. You can also watch the film in the panoramic view on mm-hmm. virtually any smartphone. So again, it's not as immersive, but you get a sense of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So one of the things that I loved about the Sidero project in general and this film was that it very closely aligned with one of the NATO Association's main sort of initiatives as a Canadian NGO, which is to raise awareness about issues of international peace and security and sort of to get Canadians talking and thinking about our role in these issues. So through your experience with the Sidero project, what were some of the main challenges that you've encountered while trying to engage the Canadian public, or perhaps some of the roadblocks to being was like ultimately successful in the project?
Right. So for the first phase of the project, we were trying to do something that hadn't been done before.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sense of urgency to respond to the problem. We wanted to get it up and going really quickly. So we needed to raise some money because we needed to hire people to actually deliver all of this.
Right.
So the first challenge was really who are the partners? And as it turned out, we raised $250,000 in a couple of months. And it was really thanks to some great partners, RBC and Samsung and Spirit Foundation. And then most of the work that we do at Artscape is really partnership-based.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been involved in a project where partners came together more quickly and with such enthusiasm.
That's great.
We have about 25 different partners now, from Union Station and Pearson Airport to different arts organizations, Refugee 613 in Ottawa, Lifeline Syria here in Toronto, as well as across the immigrant services. So DMZ at Ryerson, there's just been amazing engagement around this project, and it really couldn't have happened. So as we look to the future, that'll be our next hurdle. Is how do we kind of keep the team going? How do we keep sending the technology out to various places? And we'll need to raise some money, more money.
So what does phase two look like from here? You mentioned trying to perhaps go national or even international, raising more funds to continue the screening processes.
So our next step really is to kind of really assess the impact of the project and how successful we've been in translating empathy into action.
Mm-hmm.
And armed with that kind of that information, we'll be re-engaging some of our existing and hopefully attracting some new partners and exploring those new opportunities to take it out to the world. We know every time we screen it, there are people who want others to see the film. There's a lot of interest there. So it's really just figuring out how to make that all happen.
So should be interesting to see where it goes from here. I'm definitely excited to see more of what Artscape does with the Sidero project and other projects as well. So I just want to conclude here. So do you have any final words for our listeners?
Well, I think, sometimes because of the horrific images you might see, what's happening in Aleppo right now. You hear these numbers, 64 million forcibly displaced people. You think, oh my God, what can I do? There's, it's just so big and it's so far away. There's nothing that we can do. And what I've really come to understand is there's something that all there's small things. There are some bigger things. And we all need to get engaged in this issue because we have an interest in the future of our planet and humanity in general. This is kind of, I think, one of the, if not the biggest issue of our time.
Yeah.
So it's going to take collective action from millions and millions of people in order to kind of to address this. And I hope people can be inspired by an experience like this to get more involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Tim, for coming in today. It was a pleasure to interview you and to really get to know more about the Sidero project and what you do here at Artscape. So, once again, thank you for coming and
looking forward to collaborating. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Cool.